I think we'll get started. Our second half of our morning session is going to be dedicated to breast cancer. And during this session, we will have Dr. Donald Northfelt be our principal speaker, but he has put together really a very exciting program which will have different perspectives on the management of breast cancer, and I look forward to hearing it. Dr. Northfelt is currently the professor of medicine at Mayo Clinic here in Scottsdale. He's the medical director of the Ambulatory Infusion Center and Cancer Research Unit in the Division of Hematology Oncology. He did his training at the University of Minnesota for his medical school, then went off to UCLA, and then subsequently University of California, San Francisco. Interestingly, he did his undergraduate at University of Minnesota, then went out to Caltech to do a master's in geochemistry. I'm not quite sure how that fits together, but let's please welcome Dr. Northfelt, and neoadjuvant therapy for breast cancer will be his initial presentation. Dr. Northfelt.
Great. Thank you very much. Excellent. Hopefully you can all hear me. I've got the lapel mic on. I think I can hear myself. I will not be attempting today to explain how I moved from geochemistry to medical oncology. That's a whole other talk that I haven't really composed yet. but I am going to talk today about the neoadjuvant systemic therapy for breast cancer. And then we're going to follow that with a discussion of the value of physical activity in breast cancer survivorship. And the third talk is going to be a panel discussion, actually, with some breast cancer survivors. I have no conflicts of interest and no off-label uses to discuss. I don't think I have to say too much to this crowd about the history of breast cancer treatment. As you all know, going back a century, radical surgery was the one and only treatment for breast cancer. But as we got into the latter half of the 20th century, some systemic therapies started to be introduced into the process. So radical surgery was still in the first place, but that was often followed by postoperative systemic therapy, which was proven to improve long-term disease-free survival. So that became the standard. As the decades progressed and Dr. Fisher and colleagues were promoting the research agenda in breast cancer, it became clear that limited surgery with or without postoperative radiotherapy and additional postoperative systemic therapy was curing an increasing number of women with breast cancer. And moving into the more recent times, we've begun to introduce the use of preoperative systemic therapy into breast cancer care. And this has resulted in facilitating even more limited surgery. For example, what would previously have required mastectomy is being converted to segmental mastectomy. And what might have previously required axillary lymph node dissection now may require no more than a sentinel node sampling. So if you follow this trend over the course of the decades, it's clear that the next step is going to be curative systemic therapy, and we'll be helping you all look for new jobs. So what is the rationale for neoadjuvant systemic therapy? Well, we know, as I mentioned a moment ago, that it can improve surgical options. So converting mastectomies to lumpectomies, converting axillary dissections to sentinel node sampling. We can also use preoperative systemic therapy to determine the response to that therapy, which in some cases may allow us to abandon therapy that's ineffective. You can imagine that if I start somebody on preoperative chemotherapy and the tumor grows, we can conclude that there's no point in continuing that therapy and perhaps abort a treatment that otherwise would be providing the patient with a lot of toxicity but very little benefit. We, of course, will obtain long-term disease-free survival with adjuvant systemic therapy, whether that therapy is given preoperatively or postoperatively. I'll show you the data to remind you of the proof of this, but suffice it to say that whether systemic therapy is given preoperatively or postoperatively, or some given preoperatively and more given postoperatively, in any format that you provide the systemic therapy, it will reduce the likelihood of disease relapse for that patient. So our concept then is that it doesn't matter when we give the systemic therapy. We could give it all preoperatively, give it all postoperatively, split it up. We should still be achieving the same benefit for the patient in terms of reducing her chance of relapse in the future. Now, please note that conventional postoperative adjuvant therapy addresses only the third objective on this list. We can't improve the surgical options if we don't give the therapy preoperatively. And we can't determine whether the treatment is leading to a response in the tumor if the tumor's already been removed before we start the therapy. So on that list, the only benefit of postoperative adjuvant systemic therapy is to obtain the final objective, but we lose the opportunity to help the patient enjoy those first two. And I said I would remind you what the basis is for all of this. Well, you're probably all familiar with the NSABP B18 study, which was really the groundbreaking study in developing the concept of neoadjuvant chemotherapy for breast cancer. And in this study, as you can see, patients with operable breast cancer were identified and then randomized either to receive their chemotherapy preoperatively on your left, or to have surgery and receive their chemotherapy postoperatively, as you see on the right. There was also a follow-on study done by the NSABP. It was called B27. And in this study, all the patients received preoperative systemic therapy. You can see that in the two left-hand columns, arm one and arm two. And in arm three, they received half of the chemotherapy preoperatively and half the chemotherapy postoperatively. So what were the results of these studies? Well, in your booklets, these things are reproduced in microscopic size. So I'm not intending that you should read all the numbers, but you can still see the lines on those graphs, I believe, in your book. And all of you sitting in the back row can probably still see the lines on this graph. And the point to be made here is that the lines are superimposed. In the left-hand graph, that's the B18 data. There were two arms in the study, and each arm is represented by a line there, but you only see one line because they overlap. They were equivalent. Whether the patient got preoperative or postoperative therapy, her survival would be the same. And then in the right-hand graph, the B27, there are three arms in that study, so there are actually three lines on that study, but you can't see them distinctly either here or in your booklet because they're superimposed. There was no disadvantage to getting the chemotherapy in any particular pattern, whether it was all given preoperatively or some pre and some postoperatively, led to the same outcome in terms of patient survival. So it was these two studies, primarily in the United States and others like it in Europe, that explained to us that whether the chemotherapy is given preoperatively or postoperatively or in some combination doesn't matter. The patient is going to have the same outcome. This is just more information on disease-free survival. Again, the curves, even from the back row, you might be able to see the curves are a little bit separated when it comes to disease-free survival. And if there's any advantage to any particular arm in either of these studies, it favors the preoperative chemotherapy and the more preoperative chemotherapy. So there's no way to say from any of this that there's any disadvantage to preoperative therapy. This is the relapse-free survival making the same point. Now, I'm going to speak for a moment about the concept of pathologic complete response, because as you'll see in a moment, this is quite important to judging the true value of preoperative chemotherapy. This is the information from the B27 study. In group one, patients got a limited amount of preoperative chemotherapy. In group two, they got a more extensive amount of preoperative chemotherapy. In group three, they got half their chemotherapy preoperatively and half postoperatively. So those were the three arms in this study. And the group that had the most favorable response in terms of pathologic complete response was the group two that got all the chemotherapy, the more extensive chemotherapy, preoperatively. So there was a clear advantage in terms of achieving a complete pathologic response to getting all of that chemotherapy preoperatively. And the reason pathologic complete response is so important is demonstrated in these slides. On the left from the B18 study and on the right from the B27 study, where you can see there is a separation now between these curves. And the separation is favoring complete pathologic response as a marker of survival. So among those patients who achieve complete pathologic response, there's a dramatic improvement in survival. So not only are we learning from these studies that preoperative chemotherapy is just as good as postoperative chemotherapy, but we're also identifying a particular subset of patients, those who achieve complete pathologic response, who do particularly well with preoperative therapy. So as a result of this, preoperative chemotherapy to achieve complete pathologic response has become the sort of holy grail, the most sought after outcome. And in fact, the FDA and the scientific community at large has accepted complete pathologic response as a goal to which we should be driving with innovations in treatment. This is one additional curve I wanted to show you, again from B18, and this is focusing on women age less than 50. For those of you old enough to remember, in the NSABP world, they divided breast cancer patients into those older than 50 and younger than 50, and that was as a sort of a surrogate for menopausal status. They didn't really collect the data on menopausal status, so they made an assumption that when they were looking at women under age 50, they were primarily looking at a premenopausal group. And in that group, age less than 50, there was a very clear statistical trend toward improved survival amongst those patients who got preoperative chemotherapy. Just to remind you, in B18, one group got preoperative chemotherapy, the other group got postoperative chemotherapy. Same chemotherapy, it was just a question of whether to give it before or after surgery. And in this study, the younger women who got preoperative chemotherapy are showing a very distinct trend toward improved survival. So this is something that hasn't been repeated in subsequent studies, but it's a very tantalizing hint or thought that preoperative chemotherapy may actually help us toward the goal of having women live longer or having more women survive their cancer. I guess that's a better way to say it. I'd like to just spend a few minutes talking about some specific problematic situations in breast cancer that are being addressed in a very effective way currently with preoperative therapy. And the first topic I'd like to mention is regarding HER2 overexpressing breast cancer. As you know, HER2 overexpressing breast cancer is thought to be a more aggressive form of breast cancer. And in the past, HER2 overexpressing breast cancer was simply regarded as bad news. Women who had that were more likely to relapse sooner, more likely to die of their disease. However, as most of you also know, in the last 10 years, there's been a flood of new agents in the medical oncologist's armamentarium to treat HER2 overexpressing breast cancer. And now, when I see a patient with HER2 overexpressing breast cancer, I'm actually excited because I have so much more to offer her to improve her prognosis. So the tables have really turned in the last 10 years with respect to HER2 overexpressing cancer. We're much more optimistic now that we can overcome this disease given our new treatment strategies. And one of those important new treatment strategies is to give preoperative therapy to these women. Again, I don't think you have to read the details of this so much, but this is just pointing out that there was a study done recently and reported recently in which patients were given several different forms of preoperative therapy for HER2 overexpressing breast cancer. On the top there, you see a combination, lapatinib and paclitaxel, which is an anti-HER2 drug coupled with a standard chemotherapeutic agent. In the middle, trastuzumab, another anti-HER2 drug with paclitaxel. And on the bottom, That arm or that group of women received both lapatinib and trastuzumab, so dual anti-HER2 therapy with their chemotherapy preoperatively. Then they had surgery in the middle there, and then they went on to receive some additional therapy postoperatively. And I apologize if this is hard to read in your booklet, but I'll just read the bottom line here, which is what was the percentage of women who achieved pathologic complete response in this study? Again, you'll recall I mentioned earlier that pathologic complete response has become the gold standard for success in preoperative chemotherapy, because we know from B18 and other studies that preoperative chemotherapy to achieve pathologic complete response is going to lead to a much better long-term outcome. So in this study, patients who received lapatinib as their anti-HER2 therapy had about a 20% likelihood of achieving pathologic complete response. The women who got trastuzumab as part of their preoperative chemotherapy had about a 27% chance of achieving complete pathologic response. But the patients in the third column, those who got the dual anti-HER2 therapy, had a 44% chance of achieving pathologic complete response. So this study really demonstrated that the more aggressive or the more comprehensive we are with anti-HER2 therapy in the preoperative setting, the more likely we are to get that success defined as pathologic complete response. There was a little controversy about this because subsequently another study with a very similar treatment scheme, but all of the treatment delivered postoperatively, was reported. And in that study, there was no difference between any of these arms. And so some of the critics said, well, this study, this preoperative study, must have been flawed because it wasn't replicated by the outcomes in the postoperative study. I sort of feel like it's the other way around, that there must have been something flawed about the postoperative treatment study, that it couldn't replicate these good results with preoperative therapy. Again, I don't want you to read all the details of this, but this was another huge study that validated the benefit of preoperative anti-HER2 therapy. In this study, in the first column, patients received a combination of taxotere and trastuzumab as their preoperative therapy. That's a chemotherapy along with an anti-HER2 therapy. In the second column, they got trastuzumab, Herceptin, and pertuzumab, so dual anti-HER2 therapy with chemotherapy. In the third column, it was the dual anti-HER2 therapy with no chemotherapy. And in the fourth column, it was taxotere and pertuzumab, again, a single anti-HER2 drug being administered. And in this study, I don't ask you to read all of these, but just look at the second column there where it says THP. That's the dual anti-HER2 therapy along with the chemotherapy. And in that group of patients, on an intent-to-treat basis, the rate of pathologic complete response was 45%, 46%. And then if you cruise down to the very bottom of that column, you see in those patients who had ER-negative, PR-negative, HER2 overexpressing breast cancer, and they got the dual anti-HER2 therapy with chemotherapy, their rate of pathologic complete response was 63%. So, as I said, we're sort of moving up the ladder here in terms of our ability to achieve this extremely important outcome that leads to a much better prognosis in our patients. 63% rate of pathologic complete response with dual anti-HER2 therapy plus chemotherapy. This is what leads me to say that, you know, eventually we'll have a chemotherapy or an intravenous strategy or a pill that we're going to give patients, and we're going to say, see you later to the breast surgeons. Again, nothing to look at in detail here, but just look at these three different treatment strategies that were all given in this European study for preoperative therapy of HER2 overexpressing breast cancer. There's not really a difference between any of the three arms here, which represent three different chemotherapy recipes. In all of these recipes, there was dual anti-HER2 therapy along with the chemotherapy. And as you can see, just by looking at those columns all together, there's really not any difference. What this is telling us is that it doesn't matter much which particular chemotherapy recipe we use. As long as we're using dual anti-HER2 therapy, we're going to achieve equally satisfactory results for patients. So, you know, this is minutia that matters to medical oncologists. If I give recipe A, am I going to do as well for the patient as if I give recipe B or recipe C? And that's not anything that anybody in this room really needs to pay attention to. That's my business. But we now know quite a bit about preoperative anti-HER2 therapy. That's the point I'm trying to make. And we know that there are a lot of different recipes that we can use, and they all work very well. That's the message. I'm going to turn for a minute now to a discussion of triple negative breast cancer. This is another one that's, you know, something that people fear, a disease that's more aggressive, more advanced at presentation, occurs in younger women, more likely to reoccur with after standard therapies. So what can we do? What can we do to improve the outcome for women with triple negative breast cancer using preoperative therapy? Well, again, the minutia here is not important, but this was a four-arm study that was reported last year with different treatment schemes for neoadjuvant preoperative chemotherapy for triple-negative breast cancer. So the top of the slide here, arm number one, that's the standard therapy. They got some of the blue stuff for a while, then they got some of the yellow stuff. In arm two, they got the blue stuff and the yellow stuff, still the standard therapy, but added to it was the orange stuff. In arm three, they got the blue stuff and the yellow stuff with some light blue stuff. And in arm four, they got everything. So this is the medical oncologist world, you know, trying to mix and match these things and see what the best combination is going to be. And just to get to the punchline here, they've changed all the colors now. I don't know why the author would start out with colors like this and then change them all for the next slide. So I apologize for that. Those of you who are colorblind are probably best off at this moment because you're not going to be confused. But I'll just draw your attention to the yellow bar here. That was the group of patients who received the drug carboplatin as part of their preoperative chemotherapy. And what you're looking at there is the rate of pathologic complete response in the breast. So again, we're focusing on pathologic complete response in these preoperative studies because we know that that leads to so much better long-term outcome for patients. So the best arm of this study was the arm in which the patients got the carboplatin. The other arms, if you look at that red arm over on the end, that's the arm that got the bevacizumab. Bevacizumab is an anti-angiogenesis agent. It's the one that when patients are taking, you guys don't want to operate because it leads to wound healing problems. It also has many other toxicities, and so even though it looked relatively equivalent to carboplatin in its ability to achieve pathologic complete response, the conclusion of the authors of this study was that carboplatin was the best thing that we could be adding to preoperative therapy for women with triple negative breast cancer. And then this is the complete pathologic response rate in the breast and axilla. Not to get too deep in the weeds here, but we know that women do even better if we can make possible a pathologic complete response not only in the breast but also in the axilla. So this graph just tells us that, again, the arm with carboplatin, the yellow arm, is achieving the greatest percentage of complete pathologic response in breast and axilla. And it's 54% for those of you sitting in the back. So again, when we can get over half of the patients into complete pathologic response, if we're just clever enough with the chemotherapy, we're really promoting excellent long-term outcomes for these patients. I also just want to nod toward neoadjuvant endocrine therapy. This is not something that's practiced too extensively in the United States, but it's practiced very extensively in Europe. And the idea here is similar to what I just explained with respect to anti-HER2 therapy and special therapies for triple negative breast cancer. In patients with ER expressing breast cancer, ER positive breast cancer, what's our targeted therapy? It's anti-estrogen therapy. So we can use anti-estrogen therapy as a preoperative or neoadjuvant treatment strategy for women with that type of cancer. And I can tell you that in a lot of studies conducted in Europe and a few in North America, the safety of preoperative endocrine therapy has been well established. Clinical responses are frequent. We don't see so many pathologic complete responses. We're not so likely to achieve that with neoadjuvant endocrine therapy. But it has been demonstrated that you can increase the proportion of patients who undergo breast conservation therapy rather than mastectomy when you use preoperative endocrine therapy, just as is true with preoperative chemotherapy in certain susceptible cancers. We know from the studies that aromatase inhibitor therapy is more effective than tamoxifen to achieve useful responses with preoperative endocrine therapy. The studies done at Washington University in St. Louis have suggested that if we monitor Ki-67 expression, which is a marker in breast cancer of proliferation, tumor proliferation, if we monitor that, we may be able to predict the outcome more effectively. So for example, in the hands of the investigators at Washington University, if you treat somebody for 2 to 4 weeks with preoperative endocrine therapy and do a biopsy at that point and discover that the Ki-67 has dramatically decreased from baseline, then you know you're on the right track and that patient's likely to have a good outcome with the preoperative treatment. On the other hand, if you have a high Ki-67 at the outset, treat with neoadjuvant endocrine therapy and you don't make a dent in that, then that patient's probably not going to be very well served by continuing with the preoperative endocrine therapy. What I just stated has not migrated into routine clinical practice yet, but that's where the field is headed, looking for biomarkers that tell us early whether we're having success with preoperative endocrine therapy. So how do we select patients for neoadjuvant systemic therapy? Dr. McGrath is going to speak this afternoon about surgical approaches, and I imagine he may have something to say about selection of patients for neoadjuvant therapy before surgical treatment. We know that pathologic CR, as I mentioned, lowers the recurrence risk. And there are some specific clinical factors that are associated with a higher likelihood of pathologic complete response. Those include a tumor size that's somewhat smaller rather than larger. I mean, I imagine you all can picture that an 8 or 10 centimeter tumor in a B-cup breast is probably not going to be reduced enough in size to allow a lumpectomy. So you have to pick your battles, I would say, as far as size is concerned. We know that ductal carcinoma is more likely to respond to preoperative endocrine therapy or preoperative chemotherapy as opposed to lobular cancers. If you or your medical oncologist are investigating the intrinsic subtype of the cancer, which some laboratories are doing now, you can identify basal intrinsic subtype or HER2 overexpressing intrinsic subtype that will be more likely to respond to preoperative therapy than the luminal subtype. Estrogen receptor expression is a way to judge whether preoperative therapy is going to be helpful. For chemotherapy, those cancers that lack estrogen receptor, in other words, the triple negatives or the HER2 overexpressing ER negatives, are going to be much more likely to respond to preoperative therapy, so you'd feel much more enthusiastic about offering preoperative therapy to those women. Whereas estrogen receptor expressing cancers, at least with respect to chemotherapy, are going to be much less likely to respond in a useful way. I just wanted to mention a study like I-SPY, which we've participated in at Mayo, and this is a study in which preoperative therapies are being tested along with a lot of different biomarkers to help us identify patients who are going to do better with these strategies. And in the I-SPY 1, all of these factors, these are obviously non-clinical factors, but biomarker factors, sort of fell out as being good predictors of response to preoperative chemotherapy. That includes the mamma print, which is that first one there, the 70 gene assay. Also the Oncotype, the 23 gene recurrence score analysis is highly predictive of a benefit with preoperative chemotherapy. What I'm saying here is that the high mamma prints or the high Oncotype scores are the ones where preoperative chemotherapy is most likely to have some value. There are other genetic signatures that are listed there that have good power to predict benefit of preoperative therapy and so forth. So just to conclude, let me say that neoadjuvant systemic therapy is appropriate and perhaps preferred for any patient for whom adjuvant systemic therapy of any sort is going to be considered appropriate. So our thought process in our practice at Mayo in Arizona is that if we think a patient is going to have chemotherapy at some point in the course of her care, we're now much more inclined to do that preoperatively rather than postoperatively because we get that extra value for the patient when we give the preoperative therapy. And we don't handicap her in any way by doing so. Increasingly effective neoadjuvant strategies are being developed. I've shown you some of the data from the last year for anti-HER2 therapy and for the treatment of patients with triple negative breast cancer that's showing us this. Pathologic complete response is a very important marker of the effectiveness of preoperative therapy, and in all the research that you read about this, that's sort of the gold standard because we have learned from the NSABP studies and others that the patient's long-term prognosis is going to be much more favorable when they achieve pathologic complete response. And so all of the effort and research now is going toward identifying strategies that are more likely to achieve pathologic complete response with their preoperative therapy.